Hello, Pratik, and welcome to the Homebase Show.
Thank you, Homebase. Thank you for having me here.
So when we talk about the scene of Indian digital media, and you are among the pioneers of fake news busting here, especially in India, I want to quickly jump on the question that I have for you. And it is about your work that you did over the years while working, especially in Gujarat, and then founding Alt News. How you see your overall journey being the co-founder of Alt News? And do you remember any specific point when you look back in time, that one big moment that your work somehow directly impacted the society?
So my work in Gujarat is not that much, actually. So I'm born in Ahmedabad. I did my schooling in Ahmedabad. My parents, my father is no more. He passed away in 2014, but he was a lawyer in Gujarat High Court. My mother, who is presently the director of Alt News, both of them were social activists. My mother continues to be a social activist, all her life, human rights activist. And they worked on numerous issues, from labor rights to environment issues. And then eventually when 2002 happened, minority rights and various cases, legal cases. They have a huge body of work. I was growing up, did my engineering from Bangalore. I went to the US, went to Vietnam. Finally, I came back to Ahmedabad in 2013. And that is when I saw that they were sitting on an enormous body of work, which was undocumented. It was not up there. And we were already in an online world by 2013. So I thought it was necessary to put this online so that, there is acknowledgement of the work that they have done. And plus, there was information which was not out there in the public domain, which we thought was very necessary for it to be out there in the public domain. So I proposed an idea that we set up a website called Truth of Gujarat. The nomenclature was done by my mother, Nirjari Sinha. So I set up a website for them. I put out an editorial policy for them. They used to write really, really long stuff. So I'm like, okay, no more than 4 or 5 paras. Then we write another story. And so Truth of Gujarat became quite popular pre-2014 elections. In May 2014, my father passed away. And then I continued to be quite active on social media and, looking at how things are shaping up. And I could see that there was a considerate increase in the amount of targeted. And I was also slightly not happy with my software engineering career. I didn't think I was doing any kind of important work. So that's when the shift happened from software engineering to media, where I thought that I could use my tech skills to bring in an element which was missing in Indian journalism. I don't have a journalism degree, though. I have a software engineering degree.
So you talk about that you decided to include tech in journalism. Could you define fake news for a layman who is really not into the concept of agenda setting, who never heard about mobbed images? Could you please simply define what fake news is for a person like that?
I don't tend to use the phrase fake news. There are two words that I use, misinformation and disinformation. Let me first define disinformation. Disinformation is, let's say you know something is false, and despite knowing that it is false or untrue, you decide to propagate it either via social media or word of mouth or any which way. So that is disinformation, where you're already aware that something is false, which shows that there is a motive behind pushing out that misinformation, because you're doing it despite knowing that it is false. The largest group of people are the ones who are consuming misinformation. They have a certain ideological bias. They have, in many cases, they have a huge lack of digital and information literacy, and they consume information and they assume it to true and they propagate it or internalize it without realizing that the information is false. So that is misinformation. So there's two things: people who are creating false information, whether it is in news media, whether it is on social media, anywhere, and people who are consuming it without knowing whether it is true or false, and sometimes without caring to see whether it's true or false, because they have such a deep ideological bias that any information which adheres to their bias, it seems true to them. So these are the two broad forms of malinformation, if you may say.
Report by Reliance, 22% people from rural India started using internet. That is a huge number. When you talk about large number started using internet, is it any way possible that does that change the dynamics of democracy in India?
It is doing many things, not just changing the dynamics of democracy in India. We are introducing internet without any digital literacy. There's not even a single initiative to bring about digital literacy. even today, for example, during the pandemic, we hear so many elderly people losing lakhs and lakhs of rupees to online frauds, financial frauds, UPI frauds and things like that. And the reason for that is because they're not aware. There's so many people who can dupe them. So digital literacy is extremely important for a society, because if it is not there, then you can create narratives, any kind of narrative. And speaking about democracy, what is happening is that when we first started, and it continues till now in a very, very organized manner, there's a targeted attack on minorities in this country via misinformation and hate speech. And both sort of marry each other. So it started with a lot of misinformation. And recently, as we see in different parts of India, it has turned into hate speech, because once you polarize a population using misinformation, then it is much more easier to propagate hate speech against them, because you already have changed the mindset of people.
How could someone counter the fake news that is coming on WhatsApp? And the other was connected to it, that when we talk about infusing tech with journalism, especially in current alarming situations, like just a few days back, a news came that there's an app like TechFog, if I'm pronouncing it right.
TechFog,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, so how do you see all these things?
So question number one, how do you stop misinformation? How do you alleviate the issue of misinformation on social media or messaging apps? I don't think any straightforward. WhatsApp is one of the things, but I think Instagram, TikTok, all of this are Facebook, all of this have equal number of problems. Yes, WhatsApp might have a greater usage in India, but the nature of the problem, at least a part of the nature of the problem, is same across multiple platforms. So we have to look at it in a holistic manner. So number one, it has to be clear that at least the work that is being done now in terms of fact checking in the journalism format, that is clearly not enough to deal with this issue. Yes, once since the time we have started doing this, we have created a greater awareness in a certain section of the society, stating that look, this issue exists. And it's a very, it's almost become one of a societal nature. That is, all of the society is impacted by it. There's no portion of the society which is not impacted by it. And that it is a very, very big issue. So we have brought that much awareness in a certain section of the population. But the creation of misinformation is, in an organized manner, continues. And TechFog is an example. I don't want to talk too much about TechFog because I'm still waiting for, part two and part three of Wire Stories, because, I need a complete understanding of it. There was no Hindu genocide happening. This was political. West Bengal has a history of political violence post-elections. And this has been happening since the time of the CPM, and it was probably slightly more this time. But there was no Hindu genocide happening. So you can create these narratives using misinformation. And now, who's creating these narratives? There are people in the government, people in political parties, people in power. Who are the people who are telling that this is not true? Just a bunch of people with hardly any following are saying that, look, this is not true. I'm talking about the fact checkers. We need to bring policy changes in this country. The first and foremost, we need to bring educational policy changes. We need to teach children in their formative ages, 10, 11, before they have imbibed certain biases. We have to teach them in the formative ages how to decipher information, how to validate information, how to look at the emotional intent of a piece of information. Most misinformation is designed in order to trigger you at an emotional level so that you are compelled to share it. The language that is used, it is always designed so that it sort of causes an emotional upheaval in your head and you end up forwarding something in a state of heightened emotion. Now, we have to teach children how to live in this world of information, which is where information has such a huge emotional, emotional content. And how do you decipher this? How do you take a step back? How do you think more critically? How do you analyze information in a better way? So this is not a two-year project. This is not a three-year project. This is probably a two-decade project where we arm the society with a new skill, a skill that the society at large currently doesn't possess, and teach them how to live in a world with excess information. So that is probably the start. We don't know whether that is a solution, but at least in countries like Finland, etc., where such courses have been introduced, they do see positive impacts in the society. And when they compare their students to, let's say, American students, there have been studies which have been done, which shows that Finnish students are faring much better in terms of dealing with information and things like that. So we need a lot of policy changes. We, of course, need politicians to look at what impact it is having on the society. You know, politicians in India are very self-centered, very inward-looking. And I'm not talking about any single party. We are talking about information literacy in other countries.
Indeed, Pratik, I agree with your point on changes in education policy to educate young minds at a very young age so that they understand how big effects it have later on in their minds and in society. Still, I want to emphasize on the question that I asked about TakeFox, because I don't know if not you, who is a better person to speak and get initial comments on this report by The Wire.
So TechFog, it seems to be an app. It shows that it is being used to create, organize misinformation, disinformation, and hate. And that is what we have been seeing, that any single event which happens, farmers' protests, Jamia, JNU, anything that happens, West Bengal elections, there is an organized production of disinformation to shape narratives. And so, for example, there was post-poll violence in West Bengal. And there were real cases of post-poll violence in West Bengal. But what was done was multiple images were taken from unrelated, images and videos were taken from unrelated incidents, from somebody dying of COVID to Bangladesh, etc., and claimed that these are the people who are dying. And there's a Hindu genocide happening in West Bengal. So you can mass, you know, you can affect Twitter trends, you can even compromise WhatsApp numbers, you can do automated comments on posts in terms of abuse and attack. Now, why I did not want to comment on this issue is because the first part of the Wire story does not quote a single example that this is an example of abuse by TechFog. This is an example where somebody has used a hashtag and put it out through TechFox. So that is why I did not want to comment yet, because I spoke with the authors and they said that more information will come in part two and part three of the story, which is why I was doing comments. I have not commented on social media either regarding this issue. But and there are other questions about how do they get past Twitter's rate limitation, etc. Those questions have not been answered in my head, and which is why I did not want to comment. But let's say if whatever Wire story's claiming is legit, then it is a very, very dangerous phenomenon. That is the weaponization of information is being taken to an industrial scale now, where you can just sit, you don't even have to do the copy paste. You know, Alt News on numerous occasions has exposed how IT cells create these documents, Google documents, and then they copy paste things, and that is how they create these different Twitter trends. And there's an organized form of information creation, you know, in terms of setting political narratives. But still, there was a lot of manual work involved in that. It was dumb, but it was, you know, it was having an impact. The social media platforms were failing to see that, you know, how their platforms were being weaponized to do various kind of things. But even then, there was some manual work involved. If TechFog is what it claims to be, then they have actually, going from, manual work to automation. They are now doing automation. And we have seen what happens, you know, the efficiency increases once you do automation. So let's say if you're manually sewing saris and now you are putting it in a machine, then you can make the saris much faster. Now, in this case, these are not saris that are coming out. It's hate speech and misinformation that's coming out. So if you're creating automation around that, then it is extremely dangerous. But as I said, we need to wait for more information as to how big this issue is. We don't yet know.
Okay, so as a part of a little research of this interview, you went through your Twitter profile, and I want to take you back in time. On 12th February 2019, you posted a Twitter thread, and it was about a type of social experiment that you did exposing the mystical IT cell of a national party. And yeah. Do you remember about that tweet?
It was, I went and edited a Google document, and then everybody started tweeting out of it. I do recall, yes.
If you could explain about how was the response, what was the after effects of that?
So the way it happened was that, you know, we have infiltrated multiple WhatsApp groups, and we were seeing that there are these Google documents which were shared regularly, where, you know, it was claimed that at 9:30 may do this Twitter thread, at 12:30 do this Twitter thread. It so happened that I was in one group in which Amit Malviya was also there. And of course, I was through a different number, and he posted a document, and the document was open. And so I went and edited the document. So, you know, instead of saying that Modi Sarkar has worked for middle class, I made it opposite. Modi Sarkar hasn't worked for middle class, you know, things like that. So I made several such changes, and I just wanted to see, do people even, you know, the people who are putting out trends, do they even look at what is inside the content? And not surprisingly, no one did, you know. Even union ministers were tweeting out of that document and putting out things where the changes that I have made, they put it out verbatim. I also made a tweet that people should donate to Alt News, and they also put that out, you know, not the union minister, but some of the people also put that out I said people should support Alt News or something like that. I don't recall exactly, but I did put out something like that, and people put it out verbatim. So just wanted to show, number one, a union minister Twitter account is not controlled by the union minister himself. You know, imagine somebody else getting access to a union minister's Twitter account and saying something which is far more dangerous. Let's say making an announcement that, you know, demonetization 2 has happened. Imagine the panic in the society. So that is the number one fact that I wanted to highlight, that people sitting outside the government are actually controlling social media accounts of people sitting inside the government. And that is a very dangerous thing. That is number one. Number two was this, how easy it is to weaponize social media to put out any information you want. And number three is how this is an organized affair, and organized to the point that people are not even applying their mind when they're going about doing this job. They have been told that you have to stick the tweets on your Twitter profile, and they will do it without even taking a look at what they are posting on their Twitter accounts. So these are the three things that I wanted to highlight. They obviously, after that, they logged their documents, and I don't see those, you know, those kind of Google documents much anymore. The practice continues. The practice has not stopped. The practice continues.
So there's a section in our podcast where we ask for questions from general people, from our audience, and there are two questions. The first one is there any possible solution against fake news in terms of introducing stricter laws? I don't think a government have any proper definition of fake news or misinformation.
See, we need to understand that most of the common demands for law is jail mein dal do, you know, all of those things, you know, they want penal actions, you know. This is a very slippery slope, because misinformation is actually a subset of information, and it is a subjective matter. So going into that domain is very, 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 very dangerous. We might think that a law will come and then you will file a police complaint against somebody who's putting out misinformation. So that is one issue about the policy itself. Number two, how do you distinguish between somebody who's genuinely doesn't know what is true or false, like, you know, people who are going out and killing in terms of child kidnapping rumors, your aged grandparents in your, you know, in your house, who really don't know what they're posting, you know. Imagine a law where a lot of grandparents are in the jail because so many of them put out misinformation. So how do you distinguish between, how do you figure out what intent there is? Because criminal jurisprudence always has there's always a question of how do you figure out intent, whether somebody is putting out misinformation because of malice and somebody who's doing it without malice because they just don't know better. So there are these various issues in bringing laws. I'm not a legal expert, so, you know, I keep saying that these kind of discussions should not be happening between individuals. It should be happening in a larger forum where multiple stakeholders are there, not, you know, not like the demonetization announcement, which is being done in closed doors between a few group of people, where it affects the entire country. You know, policy decisions should happen between multiple stakeholders. But the way I look at the information world is I look at a city with a huge amount of traffic with a certain traffic rules, okay? And if you break those traffic rules, then you can get fined. Your car can be taken away for a few days. Your license can be taken away for a few days. You know, there are different kind of traffic rules across the world. In the US, for example, if you have a certain number of strikes on your license, you're not allowed to drive for a certain while. You have to go and do certain traffic tests again and things like that. Now, I would look at the information highway, you know, the internet, which is an information highway, similar to the traffic system, where you need to first learn rules. That is, if you come to a new city, let's say you bring a villager to a town, you know, somebody who's never seen red lights, somebody who's never been in a city, and say that, okay, go and follow the traffic rules. First, there has to be education, and then there has to be rules where there has to be a sort of, you know, you inculcate in the society that how important it is to follow traffic rules, because if you don't, then it causes accidents. It, you know, imagine somebody not following a red light and going in, and it can cause such a huge accident. So I look at the information highway like our actual highways, and there could be a policy around that. But again, this is how I visualize it in terms of what sort of a policy change can be brought about from the legal standpoint. More people need to sort of talk about it, and those who understand law. I don't understand law, and I don't know what would be the ramification of once a change.
Okay, so next question is from a IIMC, Indian Institute of Mass Communication student, and it is about what you advise to people who are budding and young journalists, how to counter things and what mentality they should put in their fields.
Young journalists who are, you know, graduating, they need to ensure that they have the skills, and these are very, very necessary skills when they go into the jobs, whatever job they go into. They need not counter misinformation like a fact-checking organization does, but them having the skills is very important as to how they function within the organizations. Let's say you are in a big mainstream media organization, in which the government has a lot of sort of power in controlling the editorial line. At least if you have a logical counter to why this information is false, then it becomes all the more difficult for the editor to force you to push out that information, you know. So when you equip yourself with the skills, even if you're not doing fact-checking on a day-to-day basis, at least you're fact-checking information that is circulating within your organization and posing questions to people in the organization who make decisions, the decision makers, then it makes all the more difficult for the decision makers to let the government and advertisers control the editorial line. I'm not saying that it is going to stop, but it'll become more difficult for them to just, you know, let the advertisers and the government control the editorial line.
Now, the very last question of this session, what you advise to read or to look after people to get inspired from who are doing great work in the field of journalism or busting
technique? I'm not the right person to answer that question. I'm not. So my reading is very different. I am more sort of this new age. I do read books, but I'm not as voracious a book reader as a lot of other people are. I'm currently reading one book on, you know, how algorithms are being weaponized and things like that. One of the recent books that I read was on Periyar, and, you know, a biography on Periyar. So I do read a few books, but I'm, you know, it's based on my reading is more to, you know, increase my skills and my knowledge and more understanding of the society. You know, I come from an engineering background, and a lot of engineers, they grow up in cocoons. You know, they are sort of given blinders, those horse blinders, and they don't look this way or that way. So a lot of my life was also like that. So I'm trying to understand more of the society, more of history and all of that. So my reading is very different, but I would suggest that any kind of whatever reading you do lateral reading. That is, you read from multiple sources. Don't just read from one source, you know. Don't make up your mind by reading just one source. Read multiple sources so that you can get a more overall picture and you can figure out, okay, what seems more authentic, you know. Ensure that whenever you read news, you read multiple sources.
So thank you very much, Prateek. It was indeed a very wonderful session with you. We talked about how to counter against misinformation. We do need changes in educational policies for our fight against fake news. Thank you for having a meaningful conversation. It was really a wonderful.
Thank you so much for having me here.
So guys, this is the end of the episode. I hope this podcast added value to your life. For more such episodes, stay tuned to The Omvesh Show.